Hey everyone, and welcome to the Deep Dive. So today we're going to be diving into two-shot injection molding and overmolding.
Sounds pretty complex.
It can be.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting stuff. And actually, it's something that a lot of people are curious about, especially if they're working on a project that involves, you know, multi-material products.
Yeah, for sure.
We got a great article sent to us that we're going to be breaking down today. And it covers a lot of ground. It talks about, you know, the different processes and the advantages and disadvantages of each technique, and even the cost implications, which are always important. So hopefully by the end of this deep dive, you'll have a much better understanding of how these techniques work and, you know, when to use one versus the other.
I'm ready to learn.
Me too.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start with two-shot injection molding. Have you ever heard of that before?
I have, but to be honest, I don't really know much about it.
Yeah, it's kind of a new topic.
Yeah.
But it's becoming more and more common as manufacturers are looking for ways to create more complex and functional products.
So how does it work?
Well, think about it like this. Imagine you're injecting two different colors of Play-Doh into a mold at the same time.
Okay, I can picture that.
So that's essentially what two-shot molding is, but instead of Play-Doh, we're talking about different types of plastic or even plastic and metal.
Interesting.
Yeah, and what's really cool about two-shot molding is that it lets you create these really complex parts with different material properties all in a single molding cycle.
So you don't have to mold the parts separately and then assemble them later.
Exactly. It's all done in one shot, which saves a lot of time and money.
I can see how that would be a big advantage.
It is. And it also opens up a lot of possibilities in terms of design and functionality.
Like what? Give me an example.
Okay, so think about a toothbrush. You've got the rigid handle for grip and the soft bristles for cleaning, all made in one go.
Okay, yeah.
Or a smartphone case with a hard outer shell for protection and a soft inner layer for grip. These are all examples of products that can be made using two-shot molding.
So it's not just about aesthetics, it's about functionality too.
Exactly. You can achieve a lot with this technique.
Yeah.
For example, let's say you're designing a new power tool. You could use two-shot molding to create a handle that's ergonomically designed with a soft, grippy overmold for comfort and a hard, durable inner core for strength. The article actually mentions a company that saw a huge decrease in their manufacturing costs when they switched to two-shot molding for their power tool line.
Really? What kind of cost savings are we talking about?
Well, they were able to reduce the number of assembly steps, and they also saw a decrease in material waste. So it was a win-win situation.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is. And they even saw a decrease in user complaints about hand fatigue, which is a great example of how this technique can improve user experience.
Oh, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought about that.
It's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it is. So it sounds like two-shot molding has a lot of advantages, but I'm guessing it's not a perfect solution for every application.
That's right. There are some trade-offs to consider. For example, the tooling for two-shot molding can be more complex and expensive because you're essentially working with two molds in one.
Okay, that makes sense.
But the article points out that the investment can pay off, especially for high-volume products.
I see. So if you're planning to produce a lot of parts, it might be worth the upfront cost.
Exactly.
So we've talked a lot about two-shot molding. What about overmolding? How is that different?
Yeah, let's talk about overmolding. So picture this.
Good.
You have an existing part, let's say a simple plastic handle, and you want to add a layer of rubber to it for grip. That's essentially what overmolding is. You're taking an existing part and molding a second material over it to enhance its function or aesthetics.
Oh, okay. I see. So it's less about creating a completely new part and more about enhancing an existing one.
Exactly.
So are there any other cool examples of overmolding in action?
Oh, tons. Like, think about all those electronic devices we use every day. Overmolding is often used to create those soft touch surfaces that feel good in your hand and provide a bit of cushioning.
Right, right.
Or in the automotive industry, where they might overmold a metal insert with plastic to create a strong and lightweight component.
Okay, yeah, I can see how that would be useful.
The possibilities are really endless.
Mm-hmm.
And the article mentions that there are different techniques used in overmolding.
Oh, really? Like what?
Well, one technique is called insert molding, where you place a preformed insert, like a metal piece, into the mold and then inject the plastic around it. This creates a really strong bond between the two materials.
Makes sense.
And then there's what's called true overmolding, where you mold a second layer of material directly onto a pre-molded part.
So how do you decide which technique to use?
It really depends on the specific application and the materials involved. For example, if you need a really strong bond between the materials, like in a structural component, insert molding might be the better option. But if you're just adding a soft touch or grip to a part, true overmolding might be more suitable.
Got it. So it sounds like both two-shot molding and overmolding have a lot to offer in terms of design flexibility and functionality, but I'm guessing the choice between the two often comes down to cost.
You're absolutely right. Cost is always a major factor in manufacturing decisions. And in this case, both techniques have their own unique cost considerations.
Right.
Okay, so let's dive into the cost implications a little bit. What should our listeners be thinking about when it comes to budgeting for these techniques?
Well, one of the biggest things to consider is the tooling costs. As we mentioned earlier, the tooling for two-shot molding can be quite complex and expensive.
Yeah, definitely.
And with overmolding, the tooling costs can vary depending on the specific technique you're using. For example, insert molding typically requires more complex tooling than true overmolding.
Right, right.
So the upfront investment for tooling can be a significant factor.
It can be a major hurdle for some companies, mm-hmm. especially smaller companies with limited budgets.
Yeah, for sure. But it's important to remember that tooling is just one piece of the puzzle. You also need to factor in material costs, production volume, and the complexity of the part itself.
That's a good point. It's not a one-size-fits-all situation.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to really carefully evaluate the costs and benefits of each technique before you make a decision.
So how can our listeners figure out which process is the most cost-effective for their project?
Well, there are a few key questions to ask yourself. First, mm-hmm. what are the desired material properties of your product? Do you need a hard, durable material or a soft, flexible one, or maybe a combination of both?
Right.
This will help you narrow down your material choices, which can have a big impact on cost.
Yeah, materials can be a big expense.
Absolutely. Then you need to think about the complexity of the design. If you're dealing with a very intricate part with a lot of features, two-shot molding might be a better option because it allows you to create those complex geometries in a single molding cycle. Overmolding, on the other hand, might be more suitable for simpler designs where you're just adding a layer of material to an existing part.
So complexity plays a big role.
It does. And finally, you need to think about your production volume. If you're planning to produce a high volume of parts, two-shot molding can be more cost-effective in the long run because of its efficiency. But if you're only producing a small batch of parts, overmolding might be a more economical choice because the tooling costs are typically lower.
This is really helpful. I feel like we're starting to get a clearer picture of how to choose the right process, but I'm realizing that it is a lot to take in.
It is, and we've really only just scratched the surface, but I think we've laid a good foundation for understanding the basic differences between two-shot injection molding and overmolding.
I agree. So we've covered, you know, like the basics of two-shot molding and overmolding. But I'm always curious about real-world applications. Like, how are companies actually using these techniques, you know, to create innovative products?
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes it's hard to really see how powerful these techniques can be until you see them in action.
Right, exactly.
The article actually highlights a really cool case study about a company that makes those super rugged, you know, waterproof phone cases. Have you seen those?
Oh, yeah. Those are like everywhere.
Right. They're super popular.
Yeah, they are.
And so, you know, originally they were using a traditional injection molding process just with a single material for the cases.
Okay.
But they found that, you know, the cases were either like too bulky and rigid to be comfortable to hold, or they just weren't protective enough. And so they decided to switch to two-shot molding.
Interesting. And so what did they change about the process?
Well, they started using a combination of like a really hard polycarbonate for the outer shell.
Yeah.
And then a softer thermoplastic elastomer for the inner layer. So they kind of got the best of both worlds, you know?
Yeah.
They had that tough exterior, you know, for impact resistance, and then that shock absorbing interior to protect the phone from drops.
That's so smart.
Yeah.
And did they see any other benefits besides just like improved protection?
Yeah, actually, because they were able to integrate those two materials so well, they were actually able to make the cases slimmer and more ergonomic.
Oh, that's cool.
So they were more comfortable to hold. And then they were also able to add like little design elements like textured grips and color accents.
Okay.
So it made the cases more appealing to customers.
So it wasn't just about like functionality, it was about aesthetics as well.
Exactly. Two-shot molding gave them a lot more design freedom.
I see.
And after they made the switch, they saw a huge increase in sales.
Really?
Which, you know, just goes to show that people really appreciated the, you know, the improved design and functionality.
That's really interesting. So this sounds like this is a good example of how a company can use, you know, a technique like two-shot molding to really give themselves a competitive edge in the market.
Definitely. And, this isn't just limited to phone cases. I mean, two-shot molding is being used in all sorts of industries, from automotive to medical devices to, even consumer electronics.
What about overmolding? Are there any particularly interesting examples of that technique?
Yeah, so one that comes to mind is in the medical device industry. The article mentions a company that's making insulin pens with overmolded grips. So have you heard of these?
Insulin pens.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard of them, but I don't know anything about them.
So there are these like handheld devices that people with diabetes use to inject insulin. And it can be really hard for people who have dexterity issues like arthritis to actually grip and use a traditional insulin pen.
Yeah, I can imagine. That would be difficult.
And so this company decided to use overmolding to create a more comfortable and user-friendly grip.
Okay, so how do they do that?
Well, they use like this really soft, textured material for the overmold, which made the pen much easier to grip and control. And they also like incorporated this contoured shape that fit more comfortably in the hand. And then they even added features like a finger ledge and a thumb rest
Oh,
to
wow.
make it easier to activate the pen.
It sounds like they really thought about the user experience, and all those little details that would make it easier for someone to use.
Definitely. I mean, the feedback from patients has been really positive. A lot of people are saying that the pens are just much easier to use now, and it gives them more confidence in managing their condition.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's so cool to see how, these manufacturing techniques can actually be used to make like a real difference in people's lives.
For sure. And it highlights something that I think we haven't really talked about yet, which is the importance of material selection.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. We've been so focused on, the process itself that we haven't really delved into like the materials aspect.
And it's a crucial part of both two-shot molding and overmolding. I mean, choosing the right materials can really make or break a product.
So what are like some of the key things to consider when it comes to material selection?
Well, the first thing you need to think about is like the functional requirements of your product. What kind of strength and durability and flexibility do you need? Are there any environmental factors you need to think about, like temperature resistance or moisture resistance?
So it sounds like you really need to have a good understanding of the application before you can even start thinking about materials.
Exactly. And then once you have a good grasp of the functional requirements, then you can start to, explore all the different material options that are out there.
I can imagine that's probably a bit overwhelming, right? I mean, there are just so many different types of plastics and polymers.
It can be. It's like a whole world unto itself. But there are resources available to help you sort of navigate the world of materials. Material suppliers often have databases and technical experts who can provide some guidance and recommendations.
That's good to know. So, okay, let's say we've done our research and we've identified the functional requirements. And we've narrowed down our material choices. What's next?
Okay, so then you need to start thinking about how those materials are going to interact with each other during the molding process. You don't want to choose materials that are incompatible or that will create like a weak bond between the layers.
So there's like a bit of a chemistry element to this as well.
Definitely. The materials need to have like compatible melt temperatures and flow rates, and they need to be able to bond together effectively. And there are actually different types of bonding that can occur depending on the materials and the process being
Oh,
used.
that's interesting. Can you give us an example?
So let's say you're using two-shot molding to create a part with a hard outer layer and a soft inner layer. You might choose like a polycarbonate for the outer layer and a thermoplastic elastomer for the inner layer. Those materials have compatible melt temperatures and flow rates, and they can actually form a strong, what we call a mechanical bond during the molding process.
Mechanical bond. What does that mean?
So that means that the materials are physically interlocked, kind of like two pieces of a puzzle fitting together. And that type of bond is typically very strong and durable.
So it's not just about the materials themselves, but it's also about how they interact with each other during the molding process.
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's so important to work with, experienced engineers and material scientists who can help you select the right materials and then optimize that molding process.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm really starting to understand just how much goes into creating these like multi-material products.
It is. It's definitely a complex process, but it's also incredibly rewarding. And you see those finished products and you know that you played a role in bringing them to life. It's a great feeling.
I can only imagine. So, okay, we've talked about the processes, the applications, the materials, even a bit of chemistry. Is there anything else that our listeners should be thinking about, you know, when it comes to two-shot molding and overmolding?
Yeah, I think one thing that people sometimes overlook is the importance of what we call design for manufacturability.
Design for manufacturability.
Okay, yeah.
What is that?
So that basically means you're designing your product in a way that makes it easy and cost-effective to manufacture.
Okay.
And in the context of, you know, two-shot molding and overmolding, it means considering things like, you know, the geometry of the part, the wall thickness, draft angles, undercuts, you know, all those little details.
So are you saying that the design of the part itself can actually impact how easy or difficult it is to mold?
Absolutely. If you design a part without considering those limitations of the molding process, you can run into a lot of problems. Like you might have, you know, sink marks or warpage, or the mold might not fill completely.
I see. So how can designers avoid those kinds of problems? How can they ensure that their parts are designed for manufacturability?
Well, the best way to do that is to involve manufacturing engineers and tooling experts early on in the design process.
Oh, okay.
You know, they can provide really valuable feedback on, you know, whether a design is feasible or not. And they can also suggest modifications to improve manufacturability.
So it's all about collaboration and communication between the designers and the engineers.
Exactly. The more communication there is, the better the outcome will be. And that's true for any manufacturing process, you know, not just two-shot molding and overmolding.
This has been so insightful. I feel like we've covered so much ground today. But I'm curious to know, like, what's next for these techniques? Are there any, like, new exciting developments on the horizon?
There are. That's actually a great question and a perfect segue into the final part of our deep dive today.
Okay, so we're back. And we're ready to wrap up our deep dive into two-shot injection molding and overmolding. We talked about the processes, the materials, the applications, and even design for manufacturability. But now I want to know what's next. What does the future hold for these techniques?
Yeah, well, the future of manufacturing is really all about pushing the boundaries, you know, constantly innovating.
Right.
And two-shot molding and overmolding are no exception. The article you sent actually mentions some pretty exciting advancements that could really revolutionize these techniques.
Okay, I'm ready. What kind of advancements are we talking about?
Well, one area that's really interesting is the development of new materials.
Okay.
With even more, like, specialized properties.
Okay.
So think about plastics that can conduct electricity.
Wow.
Or change color with temperature.
Really?
Or even self-heal after they've been damaged.
Self-healing materials. That sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's becoming a reality. Researchers are developing polymers that can actually repair themselves when they get scratched or cracked.
No way. How does that even work?
So these materials have these tiny little capsules embedded in them.
Oh, yeah.
And these capsules contain a healing agent.
Uh-huh.
And so when the material gets damaged, the capsules rupture.
Oh.
And they release that healing agent.
Okay.
And then that healing agent flows into the crack or the scratch and it seals it up.
Wow. So you're telling me, like, in the future, I could have a phone case that could heal its own scratches.
Exactly.
That's amazing. What kind of impact do you think that will have on, you know, product design and manufacturing?
I think it has the potential to be huge. I mean, just imagine products that are more durable, longer lasting, more sustainable because they can repair themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not just about making things cool or, you know, like giving them these extra features. It's also about being more responsible about, you know, the materials that we're using.
Right. It could really change the way we think about, like, product life cycles and, you know, waste reduction.
Definitely. So what other innovations are happening in this field?
Well, another area where we're seeing a lot of advancement is in the molding processes themselves. So we're seeing a move towards more precise and more efficient molding techniques.
Like what?
Like micromolding.
Micromolding.
Yeah.
That's that.
So micromolding is a technique that allows you to create these super tiny, intricate parts
right.
with very, very tight tolerances. And so this is being used to make things like microfluidic devices for medical diagnostics or miniature components for electronics.
So we're talking about parts that are like almost too small to see with the naked eye.
Exactly. And the level of precision that you can achieve with micromolding is just incredible.
Wow.
It's really opening up a whole new world of possibilities for product design.
What about in-mold decorating? I've heard that term before, but I don't know what it means.
Yeah. So in-mold decorating is a technique that allows you to add graphics or textures or even functional elements to a part during the molding process. So it eliminates the need for any secondary decorating processes.
So like painting and labeling and all that.
Exactly. So you're saving time and money.
Wow. So you can create like a fully finished part right out of the mold.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's pretty impressive.
It is, and it gives designers a lot more creative freedom because you can create parts with, really intricate patterns or metallic finishes, or you can even embed electronics.
Wow. Sounds like the line between manufacturing and art is getting blurrier and blurrier.
I think you're right. As these technologies keep evolving, we're just going to see more and more products that are not only functional, but they're also beautiful and innovative.
It really is an exciting time to be, following the world of manufacturing. It's amazing to see, all this stuff that's happening. So for our listener out there, what's the key takeaway from all of this?
I think the biggest takeaway is that two-shot molding and overmolding are not static. They're not, stuck in the past. They're constantly evolving.
Right.
There are always new advancements, new innovations happening all the time. So if you're interested in these techniques, stay curious, stay informed, and don't be afraid to experiment and try new things.
Great advice. And who knows, maybe our listener will be the one to come up with, the next big thing in this field.
Anything is possible.
That's a wrap on our deep dive into two-shot injection molding and overmolding. We covered a lot today, but hopefully you found it as fascinating as we did. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep making.